I'm sure we can stress now because the two good messages here. Today one is the two good messages led by the man. We will be talking about another negative aspect of it. So, I will be done with this one. But we just need to listen to them and advocate them after. So, can we introduce ourselves? And then we view our hands so that they can make that to the people.
Thank you, sir. My name is Bibreji Gant from Aute ANC. Thank you. Kassel Makala Tani ANC. Nick Kuhn of Western Cape ANC.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, members. There are still other members who are coming. They're held up in traffic, and it's not very easy to wake up early in winter. But they are coming. But the comfort man is too early for them. Nothing going. Let's give over to you, Reverend Thomas. We'll give over to you to introduce your team, and then we move on.
Thank you, Chair Dr. Kofara. My name is Thomas Afsahide. I'm Deputy Director General in the Department of Science and Technology. Good morning, honourable members.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Gilbert Tico from the Department of Science and Technology.
I am Council of Ottoman Committee Assistant in this committee.
Leanna Kranz, Mandat Line Office of Ministry. Mandat Koso, I work in the Office of the Attorney General of DSG.
Good morning, Gilbert Mlangeni, working in the Office of the DG.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members, Kenan Zete from the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the Portfolio Committee for inviting us to come and talk to you about our marine and Antarctic research strategy. I need to stress, Chair and Honourable Members, that what we're presenting to you here is a draft strategy. The work has not yet been finalised. I will be later on outlining the next steps that we'll be taking with this document, but I need to emphasise that it is a draft of the strategy. So the overview of the presentation is I'd like to first of all present you the strategic context within which this Marine and Antarctic Research Strategy, which we will refer to as MARS, within which MARS has been developed. I'll grant you the vision, mission and objectives of the strategy and give you an overview of how we came to develop the strategy, the development of the strategy. The strategy consists of research plans, and I'd like to introduce you to those research plans, and then outline to you the framework and thematic priorities of the Marine and Antarctic Research Strategy itself, and then provide you some insight into the details of how we intend implementing the strategy, and then just lastly, the way forward on the strategy. So first of all, looking at the strategic context, for this. You will know, honourable members, that South Africa is surrounded by an ocean on three sides, on the west, the south and the east. It has a coastline that's almost 4,000 kilometres long. In addition to that, South Africa has sovereign possessions in the form of islands in the Atlantic, Antarctic region called Prince Edward and Marion Islands. And if we include the size of the exclusive economic zone around Prince Edward Islands with the South African exclusive economic zone around our continental coastline, that works up to 1.5 million square kilometers. The exclusive economic zone, I think it's a 200 kilometer stretch, isn't it? It's a 200 kilometer stretch from the coastline, which has been agreed internationally is as it were domestic property. And so there are, however, moves to extend this according to something called the Continental Shelf Claim. These are negotiations that are happening at the UN at the moment. And if we're successful in claiming the additional waters around South Africa in terms of the so-called Continental Shelf area, that would add another 50% of land, of coverage of square meters to the total economic zone of 1.5 million square kilometers. So we have a huge space of ocean and coastline that we need to manage and do research on, understand it, and understand what sort of resources there might be in those areas. Secondly, South Africa occupies an important geostrategic position in the Southern Hemisphere, being surrounded by three great oceans, the Indian Ocean, the South Atlantic Ocean, and the Southern Ocean. And South Africa is the only African nation with a foothold in Antarctica. We have a base there, as the Honourable Member know. And we therefore bear responsibility to serve as a channel for broader African research in the Antarctic region. So both from the point of view of the position of South Africa at the tip of the continent, surrounded by all of these great oceans and our proximity to Antarctica, we have scientific and geographic reasons for focusing research in this area, but we also have strategic reasons as being the southernmost point of Africa that's situated in this area. It's important to point out, from the point of view of comparative size, that the exclusive economic zone of South Africa is 1.5 million square kilometers, whereas the land size of South Africa is only 1.2 million square meters. If you remember, if we add to the exclusive economic zone, the so-called continental shelf, depending on what happens at the UN negotiations, we would increase this not from 1.5 million square kilometers to 2.3 million square kilometers. So significantly more than the actual land surface of South Africa, which is the surface of the ocean that South Africa would have responsibility and authority over. So this puts really the need to focus on oceanographic or oceanic activities, the need to put those into perspective. So the therefore this really brings us then to the purpose and then of the Marine and Arctic Research Strategy. The vision of which is to create a demographically balanced marine and Antarctic research system that strives for high quality research and development of national capacity. And the mission of the strategy is to establish a national marine and Antarctic research system that reduces maximum human capital, innovation, economic growth, and increased international profile and influence. The strategic significance, already the purpose of the objective, is to promote fundamental and applied research, to capitalize on our geographic advantage, to ensure the availability of long-term data for environmental management. This position that we've got at the tip of Africa, at the meeting point of these three oceans and the Antarctic, means that we have an ability here to study the influence of this environment on climate, and particularly on climate change. The scientists tell us that the interaction between the Indian, the Southern Ocean, and the South Atlantic, that the interaction between these oceans are a very, very important driver of the climate, and therefore possibly of climate change, or what's going to happen with the climate as we move ahead. So we're positioned here at a point where we can access data and do research that has real important implications for understanding of climate change and of climate. And in order to do that, however, we need long-term data. You don't just do research from one day to the next. You have to track patterns over long periods of time in order to be able to model the effectiveness on climate and climate change. We obviously need to develop the necessary human capital base aligned with national plans and instruments. Research and development that breeds innovation and industry connectivity is another very important purpose of the research strategy. Development of critical mass of local scientists, particularly from previously disadvantaged groups, amongst previously disadvantaged individuals. And then lastly, growing general public awareness and engagement that is aligned with national priorities. So these are really the purposes of the Marine and Antarctic Research Strategy. Those purposes find expression in a set of six strategic objectives, which are outlined on this slide. The first one is to provide a well-coordinated governance system for marine and Antarctic research activities. As you all know, honourable members, this is research in the marine and Antarctic environment. It's not something that's been only on the Department of Science and Technology and the universities. The Department of Environment Affairs plays an important role, and to a lesser extent, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, possibly the Department of Defense through the Navy, Department of Transport, ports through marine transport issues. So there's a range of government interests in this area, and we need to manage the process of exploring from a research perspective that environment. Secondly, we need to ensure the sustainability of marine and Antarctic resources. Thirdly, to develop a marine and Antarctic human resource pool. Obviously, this is a research pool. Improve the quality of life for South Africans derived from the ocean's economy, which is closely aligned with the Operation PISA initiative that you also know about. We need to create a society that's informed on the value of marine and Antarctic research activities initiatives, and then lastly contribute to the creation of employment derived from innovation linked to the ocean's economy. So these are the explicit objectives of the Marine and Antarctic Research Strategy. And you will already see that they have been influenced by high-level priorities of government around the development of the ocean economy as they've emerged out of the Operation Patisa activities. Now, how did we go about developing this strategy? First of all, I need to point out that the strategy was constructed both bottom-up and it was finalized top-down. So we developed broad research themes in consultation with the marine and Antarctic research communities. So in a sense, this constituted the bottom-up part of the development of the strategy. They identified what are the research priorities, the marine environment and the Antarctic research environment. And after that, we developed separate research plans for the marine environment and Antarctic and Southern Oceans sectors. So these two research plans, in a sense, underpin the overarching Marine and Antarctic Research Strategy. And these plans were consolidated into the strategy. So this was the bottom-up part of it. The process also involved very close collaboration with the Department of Environment Affairs. From the beginning, we had agreed with our colleagues in the Department of Environment Affairs that we need to have one national strategy for research in the marine and Antarctic area. And we agreed, therefore, to do this jointly. The operational management of the process lay with the National Research Foundation on behalf of the DST, but researchers from the Department of Environment Affairs, specifically from their Ocean and Coasts Division, were closely involved in all of the stages of the development of the research plans and of the strategy itself. So the strategy has at its core the development of capabilities in marine and Antarctic research in line with the National Development Plan, and it also considers current international trends and priorities. For example, the need to understand the role of biodiversity in maintaining ecosystem functionality, understanding the relationship between human pressures and ecosystems, and understanding the impact of global climate change on marine ecosystems and vice versa. This is a schematic diagram of how we went about to develop this draft strategy that I'm presenting to you today. The Department of Science and Technology, with relevant stakeholders, developed a terms of reference for the establishment of these two research plans the ASO, which is the Antarctic and Southern Oceans Research Plan, and the Marine Research Plan. So these are the two plans that I referred to early on. And they were drafted by the Department, the National Research Foundation, Department of Environment Affairs, and researchers that sit in these two research domains here, who developed these research plans. After that, the Department of Science, Technology, and Department of Environment Affairs factored into what had come out of these research plans current national priorities like the National Development Plan, Operation Pakisa, the 10-year Innovation Plan of the Department of Science and Technology, and issues around consolidation and benchmarking. These were factored in by the department then, that's the top-down part of it, and to result then finally in the Marine and Antarctic Research Strategy, which, as I said, is in its final draft form at the moment. So, just to give you a little bit more insight into how these marine research plans were developed, if I may just digress quickly, Chair and Honourable Members, this presentation on a strategy is a fairly, in a sense, dry one, because I'm presenting a strategy to you, and you don't really get an impression of the attractiveness of the environment in which this research takes place. The blue ocean, the cold Antarctic, the penguins, the people on boats. So, with your permission, what we'd like to do after this presentation on the strategy, we put together a set of slides with pictures, with images, of our research programs in marine and Antarctic environment. And with your permission, I'd like to ask them later on, Dr. Seacoat, to present this. So if you're not seeing many images yet, because we've got this second presentation that we'd like to make to you later on that gives you a much better visual impression of what all of this is about. So just to give you now a little bit more insight into how the research plans were developed, the terms of reference for the development of the marine research plan was to develop, first of all, a single comprehensive national marine and coastal research agenda as part of the overall strategy. Secondly, to identify and prioritize mechanisms for optimizing marine and coastal research funding using existing instruments, because there's a lot happening already, but it's not well coordinated across different government departments. And then lastly, to identify areas of marine research that require new instruments. And the result of that was in the marine research plan, which had three research teams that focused on South Africa's geographic advantage along the exclusive economic zone that I mentioned, including the continental shelf areas. We looked at the geographic advantage that resides in our coastal areas. The three themes that emerged were, first of all, oceans and marine ecosystems under global change, one high-level theme for research. The second one was ecosystems, biodiversity, and biodiscovery. And the third was coastal and marine resources, society, and development. So these were the three themes that were identified as being strategic priorities for research activities. And then in the slide, the members will have seen this and can read it at their leisure, is given a little bit more detail of the sort of research activity that would take place under these key themes for the marine plan. Turning now to the Antarctic and Southern Oceans Research Plan, which is the second basis, the second foundation on which the strategy is based, the terms of reference for this was to enable research activities to make a difference and to deepen the output and networks of the research system, to ensure South African authority and leadership on issues relating to Antarctica and the Southern Ocean. This is capitalizing on our geographic advantage, just like we are capitalizing on our astronomical geographic advantage. We see the development of high-level cutting-edge research in the Antarctic, Southern Ocean, the marine environment as another area where we can develop South African leadership at a global scale based on our geographic advantage here. Thirdly, to enhance development of a research agenda that generates appropriate knowledge, both for things like climate monitoring, climate predictions, as well as economic development and innovation. And then lastly, to enable South Africa to satisfy national imperatives and obligations in the Antarctic Treaty System. We are members of various international treaties around the protection of the Antarctic, and in order to be able to give effect to the responsibilities we have in terms of those multilateral treaties, we in fact have to do certain amount of research, there's certain work we have to do in the environment to be able to give effect to those. And and that has been incorporated in the research plan for the Antarctic and Southern Ocean area as well. This research plan then developed a research team that focused on South Africa's National Antarctic Program, SANAP, which is a long-standing program managed by the National Research Foundation, on the Antarctic and on the sub-Antarctic islands, the Prince Edward and Marion Island areas that I mentioned earlier on. And again, there are four themes or thematic areas that the strategy focuses on. The one is on Earth systems, the other is on living systems, the third is on the human enterprise, that's the interface between Antarctic Southern Oceans and human development, and then lastly, innovation, looking at technology and engineering development in that environment. Again, the blocks there present you then a little bit more insight into the details of the sorts of research that will be undertaken under the key themes, these four key themes. So these were the two building blocks, the marine research plan and the Antarctic Southern Oceans research plan, that then needed to be fitted together into the overall marine and Antarctic research strategy. And so I will now start talking a little bit about the top-down considerations on how these plans were fitted together into the marine research strategy. So on this slide, you'll see, in a sense, the framework of strategic drivers that we wanted to embed in the strategy. In the top half of the diagram, you'll see a reference to a set of objectives, things that we wanted the strategy to achieve. Environmental sustainability is a key objective. Development of science, technology, human resources is another one. Quality of life, moving towards an information society, and an employment creation. So these are high-level strategic objectives or purposes of the Marine and Antarctic Research Strategy. In the lower half of the diagram, you'll see what we call enabling conditions. These are environmental conditions that need to be managed and optimized to ensure the optimal delivery of the strategy. So we need appropriate policies to support research in this environment. We need an appropriate regulatory framework. We need appropriate research funding at the appropriate levels and the right sorts of research programs, research funding programs. We need the right kind of research activities. We need capacity building and we need infrastructure. So these are the enabling conditions that governments would need to ensure are optimized if we want to see a return on our research activities in marine and Antarctic areas. So, this then gives rise to the following thematic priorities for the strategy. In other words, overriding the research plans. These are the higher level strategic priorities, thematic priorities of the strategy. Oceans and marine ecosystems and the global change. Earth system conservations, ecosystems, biodiversity and biodiscovery. Innovation and development and human enterprise. So from the point of view of looking at what are the areas we want to do research in, not what are the enablers that we have to look at, like infrastructure and capacity development, but from a thematic, from a research point of view, what do we want to do research on in order to be able to deliver all the strategic objectives of the framework which I outlined in the previous slide. In this one here. So these strategic objectives and these enablers. So the strategic objectives there, and these are things we have to look after. In addition to that, on this slide, you see the outline of what are the areas in which we want to do research in. Those are unpacked in the next set of slides. So these five thematic areas, the first one is oceans and marine ecosystems and the global change. So here you can see then, on the right-hand side in the bullets there, some of the research priorities, as it were, second level research priorities that would be interesting. So if I can just take you to the last bullet under the top section, reconstructing past climate changes. This is very important. It's important for us, our understanding of how has the climate changed in the local environment and on Earth over the last millions of years, in order for us to be able to understand better how it might change in the future. So this would be one of the research topics, as it were, under this thematic priority of oceans and marine ecosystems under global change. Another one would be, for example, to establish global, regional, and coastal system indicators. You can measure all kinds of things in these environments. What's important is to reach agreement on what are the key indicators that one wants to track over a long term in order to be able to monitor climate change, for example, and in order to be able to exchange information with international partners. No use other countries monitoring different indicators and us monitoring different set of indicators. We can't exchange information. So standardizing on the sort of indicators that we're going to measure for these purposes is an important aspect of it. Turning to the second priority, Earth systems observations. For example, here I always referred earlier on already to this item, understanding large-scale ocean circulation and global climate. So the way that the Indian Ocean, the South Atlantic, and the Southern Ocean, the way that these oceans interact with each other, is a very important factor determining climate change, global climate change. So to what extent are they able to absorb heat? To what extent does the Indian Ocean, which brings warm waters down our east coast, if this flows into the South Atlantic and warms the South Atlantic Ocean up, what happens to the global climate? These are the sorts of questions that would be asked under this thematic priority here. The third thematic priority, ecosystems, biodiversity and biodiscovery. You'll see here again there's a reference to reconstructing past climate changes. I've previously identified this. So there's some cross-correlation between these thematic priorities, which is important. Otherwise, your research is going to go all over the area. So you've got to try and coordinate it. Developing end-to-end modeling and operational prediction capabilities, for example, it's important for us to understand how ecosystems, biodiversity change as the climate may change. And it's important for us to be able to predict these things. So we develop modeling capabilities and prediction capabilities in order to be able to anticipate changes in ecosystems and biodiversity. What's going to happen to our fish stocks, for example, as temperatures of water change. Turning to innovation and development, which is a fourth thematic priority, you'll see here, those of you who have some familiarity with the Operation Pakista activities, you'll see here many of the themes that were picked up in Operation Pakista. Sustainable coastal and ocean development is closely related to governance of the marine environment, for example. Oil and gas, fisheries, mining, agriculture, these are key themes in the Operation Pakista exercise, as with energy management. So under this thematic area here, we will be looking at undertaking research that assists in the development of these economic activities around the notion of an ocean economy. And then lastly, human enterprise. This is looking at the interface between society and the marine and Antarctic research, marine and Antarctic domain. So for example, understanding geopolitics around the marine and Antarctic environment. And understanding some about Antarctic arts. I have soon to find out what Antarctic arts are because I don't think that there were people living in the Antarctic until fairly recently. But I'm sure the experts will have some idea. Understanding architecture in the environment, literature, social adaptation and human impact. So this was a formulation of research activities outside of the narrow domain of the human, of the natural and physical sciences. So at a high level, and very briefly, that then is an overview of the thematic content of the research strategy. How will the strategy make a difference? Well, it will provide a platform for coordination of marine and Antarctic research, addressing national priorities and capacity development through structured funding. It will also ensure that there is improved value for money by establishing structured planning around the national priorities such as Operation Pakista initiatives. So those have been integrated into the strategy. How will we deliver on the strategy? Well, there are six key interventions that are necessary in order to maximize the impact of the strategy in terms of the output that it produces, research output, human capital development, inputs into economic development and innovation, input into our understanding of climate change, input into the responsibilities we bear as part of the international treaty system around the Antarctic and so on. So to maximize those outputs, first of all, coordination and governance. In terms of the South Africa, the DSP will establish a steering committee to guide the implementation of the strategy in partnership with the Department of Environment Affairs, Agriculture, Forestry, Fisheries and Forestry, and other key stakeholder departments. And this committee will be responsible for leveraging resources and providing policy leadership on implementing the strategy. So it's an interdepartmental coordination body. The committee would appoint a reference group of experts, or possibly reference groups, as needed from the research community to serve in scientific and advisory bodies. We often have to second people to international scientific bodies in this area. For example, we need experts to advise the interdepartmental structure on policy issues and into the relationship between science and policy. And the steering committee would ensure that scientific research informs policy decisions by drawing on and establishing these groups of experts, and it would establish a system to ensure that logistical needs for researchers are managed to be in line with respective capabilities of our departments and research entities. To a large extent, that's already in place. We have regular meetings and regular structures, especially with the Department of Environment Affairs, because, as you know, the Department of Environment Affairs provides logistic support to research activities in the Antarctic and Southern Ocean area that are undertaken through universities and through our science councils. So there's already a structure in place between the Department of Environment Affairs and DSC to support this. The second intervention is around human capital development and transformation. And in line with the department's human capital development strategy, which I presented to the committee in the past, the research strategy will provide a platform for balancing demographics through customization of existing research funding programs and human capital development programs, which I presented to you as part of our overview of human capital development in the past, and through strategic transformation interventions that will be implemented to bring about rebates, including focused recruitment and training of black students in broad Antarctic and marine research programs, strong support for existing transformation programs that historically disadvantaged institutions. Dr. Sikko later on will be introducing to this PULISA program, which is a very successful program that's been rolled out in Fort Hare University and also Sisun University, which are not universities that historically have had any involvement in marine research, but are now getting very involved through efforts by the South African Institute for Aquatic Biodiversity. So, and then development of a mentoring program to provide support for young researchers. So these are the sorts of examples he might talk to later on with the slides he'll be presenting. Then the third intervention is to continue to build research capacity and develop research capacity. Research groups and consortia are critical for development and maintenance of research excellence. There are pockets of expertise that already exist and that need to be nurtured to be able to attract the next generation of researchers. Existing instruments need to be customized to address the growing research capacity marine and Antarctic environment. Emerging research and development programs, we need to make sure that they focus efficiently on building capacity in the marine and Antarctic research environment, so we need to tweak them strategically. We need to ensure that there's a strong system of postdoctoral fellowships, for example. We need to make sure that university academics, early stage university academics that are developing careers in marine and Antarctic research, that they get support specifically in that area. And we need to also then not neglect the needs of established researchers. We already have a strong established research base in marine and Antarctic research, and we need to ensure that those continue to receive support so that one doesn't focus only on building the next generation. Because for the next 5 or 10 years, the existing established researchers are going to be very important parts of our research system. Public awareness and engagement is a fourth intervention. We have done some research which suggests that there's a very low level of understanding of basic concepts and principles related to the marine environment. So even though, but at the same time, even though people do not know much about the marine environment, it's a very immersive subject. Everybody thinks about penguins and polar bears, which they aren't in Antarctic, by the way. Blue ocean scenes, beautiful coastal scenes, wonderful fish. So people have strong visual attachment to this environment, but they actually don't know very much about it. And that's a contradiction that has to be managed through public awareness and engagement activities, because we can't, it's for policy, just simply because the ocean is beautifully blue, you know, so there needs to be a richer engagement with the public around developing understanding of the marine and Antarctic environment, so that policy can be informed from the bottom up as well. So key action here will be to develop platforms to engage with the public in discussion and evolving two-way exchanges that would raise the importance of Antarctica and the ocean and the impacts of our actions on them. So understanding better what are those, what is the potential impact. You may know, honorable members, that certain courts in the United States have recently given the go-ahead for Shell to begin exploring for oil in the Arctic region. Now, there are some other, as I understand it, there are two other levels of the legal system that's in the U.S. that still have to approve this as well. So, you know, they may still not approve it, I don't know. But the point is that it's giving rise to significant concern amongst wide areas of the population in the U.S. and Canada and in Europe too. So this is a sensitive area, what we can or can't do in the Arctic and in the Antarctic. And we can be certain that as the race for resources in the Arctic area starts getting sorted out, the race for resources in the Antarctic is going to start warming up as well. And in marine and Antarctic public engagement plans will be crafted in line with our new Department of Science engagement strategy. There's two more interventions. The first is dealing with infrastructure issues and research platforms. There's a rich suite of platforms and infrastructure that's already available. Dr. Seeker will show you some pictures of those later on for Antarctic and broader marine research, but we need to coordinate access to them to avoid duplication of resources and to maximize the utilization. For example, the Agalas, the Agalas 2, is capable of, as we understand, of spending about 300 days at sea. Out of 360 days in the year, it's built to spend 300 days per year at sea. It's currently utilized for about 180, between 180 and 200 days only. And clearly, therefore, we're not utilizing this infrastructure to the maximum of its capacity. Now, the reason for that is mainly because we don't have the necessary operation costs, the operational budget, to support an extended operation of the boat for 300 days at sea. So together with the Department of Environment Affairs, we recently visited Brussels, where we participated in a conference on marine and Antarctic research and Atlantic research, and we began to talk to international partners about the possibility of joint utilization of the spare capacity of the Agalas, where South African research and international research partners would together absorb the additional capacity that is still available on the boat. So maximizing the use of the available infrastructure is an important aspect of delivering on this strategy here. So government support and appropriate funding for both science and the necessary logistics support will provide future national and international opportunities for early career established research and working in the region. I just referred to that a moment ago. And so the effective management of training, logistics, and technical support is imperative, and strong technical capacity will ensure Antarctic countries produce South Africa just as a point of shipping out their equipment for servicing, but that they would begin to utilize South African expertise to provide services at a significantly reduced cost. So, you know, repairing equipment and boats and preparing them in South Africa for excursions into the Antarctic and the Southern Ocean, for example, can be done much more effectively and efficiently if it's done in South Africa, provided we've got sufficient technical skills and resources to support those sorts of activities, than if the country who owns those boats do it in Northern Europe or wherever else. So this is also an ambition within the Operation Pahisa Marine and Transport and Marine Transport and Manufacturing Laboratory, is to build the capacity in South Africa to provide these sorts of value-added services to marine excursions in that area. Then the last intervention is data management. I've referred previously to the importance of tracking long-term data, and these are large volumes of data, complex data of a lot of different kinds. So managing all of that data becomes very important. So we need to develop proper centralized management of data emanating from the ocean, Antarctic, and the islands as we undertake broader research there. Such centralized data management will be invaluable in sustaining and advancing scientific inquiry and would undoubtedly increase opportunities for learning and innovation. As part of the data dynamics of the ocean and Antarctic research, an Antarctic and ocean data management system and center should be established. The center will function primarily to identify and manage existing databases and keep records of their contents, purpose, and restrictions of use, and identify gaps, and in so doing, initiate processes to address these gaps, either through new collection efforts or through new database creation. The center will also function as a platform to provide the necessary information for the marketing of South African activities in the ocean and Antarctic regions. So this focus on developing the data management capacity in South Africa, both from an infrastructure and from a skills point of view, this aligns closely with the department's big data strategy, the development of our national cyber infrastructure, the Center for High Performance Computing, the South African National Research Network. These are all supportive infrastructures that align with this objective under the marine strategy of managing the collation of data from marine and Antarctic research. So I've indicated that we currently have a draft strategy. We intend publishing that strategy in the Gazette for broader public inputs very shortly, and to that end the Minister will be presenting the strategy to Cabinet for permission to publish it in the Gazette for public consultation purposes. And thereafter, once the public consultation process is complete and the strategy has been revised according to the inputs that we received during that process, the intention then is for the Minister of Environment Affairs and the Minister of Science and Technology jointly to submit the strategy to Cabinet for approval, because it's been jointly developed and it will be jointly administered and implemented. So that's part of the plan. And then the second part is we will continue to develop implementation plans in consultation with the stakeholders and the partners. So the research plans that I outlined to you earlier on, we need to provide more details to them now in terms of what precise funding programs we will put in place, what is the level of resourcing that we can invest in these research plans over the near-term future, how do we want to develop the infrastructure platforms. So there's a level of detail which is not currently in those research plans, which are about the implementation, and that will be developed as we move ahead. So the last answer, the last question that may still be in your head now, which I'd like to ask to answer, is having outlined the marine and Antarctic research strategy to you, so what's the strategy going to do for us? And I outlined to you early on what we're intending to do, and I'd like to now just highlight again what we're hoping the strategy will enable us to achieve. So first of all, we're hoping that it will ensure availability of long-term research data for sustainable environmental management, both in terms of understanding climate change and in terms of understanding ecosystem changes, biodiversity changes in the coastal and arena environment. Secondly, we're hoping that this strategy will allow us to maximize the international research impact from our geographic advantage. I have previously mentioned to the Honourable Committee members that in the area of astronomy, we are becoming a global leader because we have wrapped up our astronomy program and invested significantly in it over a number of years. Through a number of different initiatives, we have managed to develop South Africa's astronomy capability and capacity to being really globally competitive. There are other areas of research in South Africa where we're globally competitive, but astronomy is one of them. And we believe that we can achieve a similar improvement in the global impact of research in the marine and Antarctic environment by following the strategy. We certainly intend improving the demographics and expanding the capacity of the oceans and Antarctic research community in South Africa through this strategy. The strategy should also enable us to focus on technology development and transfer and economic development in support of the Operation Fakisa for the oceans economy. And then lastly, the strategy should allow us to enhance public awareness of the importance of science and research to environmental management. This is a very important social outcome of the strategy. With that, I come to the end of the presentation on the strategy. Thank you for your attention and interest. And Chair, if I may hand over to Dr. Siko, who will now present, I think, a much more compelling view of the work that we're doing in this environment.
Will be done by other team members. Honorable Anneli and Honorable John, they're sitting beyond me, so they're part of the community. If the professor had heard, we would actually think that is the business of forest and fisheries. I'm not sure if my perspective is so much, but I think living here in the head, you would
definitely. That is what for sure is off of that now as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for having me. I'm just going to briefly present you the pictorial overview of initiatives that we currently do, because there are quite a number of programs that have been set up over the years. Firstly, I'd like to present to you the work that has been done by the African Silicon Ecosystem Program. The African Silicon Ecosystem Program, which is now known as ASAP, has initially established around the discovery of the silicon, which was considered to be a fossil fish, which was considered to be extinct, that was discovered around the KZN coast. So what has transpired then is that this program has now since then expanded to provide a lot of infrastructure for the brain research community. One of the things that has been provided investment is the one of the investments that was made was the acquisition of the remotely operated vehicle, which also assisted in visualizing what is currently happening under the water. After the further discovery of more silicons that were later discovered in 2011, to indicate that there are actually a colony of silicons that exist underwater. And one of the things that also has been investment in terms of monitoring as well is that the what has been provided for the measures was a baiting system with cameras to basically attract the fish. It attracts the fish once it enters the water, it secretes Kirkland Oil, which then attracts the fish and all the fish that are around the instruments are then filled. And then it will be able to profile the fish. And one of our institutions, which is the Parambit Earth Observation Network, is internationally renowned to lead in this process. One that is being provided by the African Central Ecosystem Program is the coastal research platform, because sometimes we require small vessels that will enable training of researchers and as well as students, new researchers, bringing them to the ocean, because as you all know that Dr. Ali has indicated that using large vessels like the Agalas is quite costly. So now when you're using small vessels like this ski boat, we're able to even equip it with other things like the CDG, which is mainly connectivity, an instrument that has connectivity, temperature, and depth of the ocean, so that we can be able to immerse it in the water during the using this vessel. One of the things that the name of this vessel was Ukwabalana, which means to share. Hence, it was meant for the whole research community to be able to use that vessel. But then it ended up being oversubscribed. And once oversubscribed, somehow had a similar vessel which was not utilized, which is the Kudo, which is lying next to the Ukwabalana on the beach there. So that ultimately it was recustomized as well to be able to provide a system whereby we can launch the multi-operated vehicle and also the CTDs. Another system that is being provided for the research community is that the acoustic telemetry, which basically tracks the system that is being used by the researchers to track the fishes. That means there are certain types of fish species that have been tagged, and also those that are considered to be for conservation purposes that have been tagged. And then along the South African coast, this telemetry system allows the researchers being at their own desk, at the comfort of their own desk, but through satellite imagery and satellite data, they are able to see the qualities of the fish. One of the things that is important is that this operates through a network, which is called Ocean Tracking Network, and with other countries. And that's that ultimately, once the fish is checked, you can easily be able to go to see, for example, one of the key things was that a white shark, the African white shark, which was taken to South Africa, was also seen going to Australia, was seen in the Australian coast, and then was also seen that coming back. And that created more interest for the center to try to investigate what are the areas that, what prompted this white shark to move from South Africa to Australia and back. And one key thing that, as we all indicated, that we need a transformation. We need a transformation, and transformation is a key element for delivering our objectives. So, as when ASAP established what we call the political program in the two institutes, that is the Waltasi Sulu and Fort Hare, the limitation of bringing previously disadvantaged individuals in the system was that most of them are considered not to have, I would not be able to swim. So, and to alleviate that problem, so a Kulisa program was customized to ensure that students are taught how to swim. And once they've been taught how to swim, then they also, because they also have to be able to operate smaller crafts, because one of the universities have a smaller craft, but they have not been utilized. So to revive the courses, they also have to be taught, basically being given skipper licenses, so that they can individually operate this small vessel. And from them, then they will also be being taught how to deploy systems, research equipment in the water. As you can see over here, we've got students from Waltasi Sulu and Fort Hare deploying, for example, the CDD, which is a conductivity, temperature, and depth instrument, or that goes down to the water and measure the system. And thereafter, then they also are able to operate in the small vessels, so we see not just in the ocean but in the estuaries, to also do some something, compare those something with what is observed in the broader ocean. One of the successes is that in 2014, a huge cohort of students graduated from Fort University, of which this was an honors group, and all of them have joined the master's program, and some of them are also pursuing PhD. And the most important thing that again in 2013, one of the first graduates of the Kushisa program was ended up being appointed in the old high school, whereby he's also now supervising some of these young students. But the ultimately in future will be the same is a producer graduates and with all of them with red coats. And again now with the ASAP program, there's an international program that called Dallas Somali Lads Marine Hospitality Program, ASCME, which is a global GF, Global Environmental Fund supported program. But then it's housed within ASAP, within FIRE, the South Institute of Aquatic Biodiversity. But through FIRE funding, the South African researchers are now able to operate the network with other African countries. So that ultimately, the only investment that South Africa does make is on ASAP. But then now through ASVME, they're able to access and study the different codes and try to study interrelations between the different coastal systems. For example, Madagascar, Mozambique, and even Tanzania and Mauritius as well. So this network now enables the research communities to deploy larger facilities. Remember that now with, you can see here the deployment here of the large CBD as compared to the one that was in, that is previously being deployed by the Pulitzer program. So it does the same thing, but now it has to go much deeper in the ocean as compared to what is currently happening in the world.
Explain quickly, honorable members. This instrument here basically consists of a number of vessels, plastic vessels, empty jars as it were. This whole thing gets sunk down, and you can program at what depth these things open up. They've got lids on them. And so you can program at what depth they open up to let water in. So you can capture water samples at a range of different depths as you drop this thing down. And then when they all have opened up and you collect the water samples at the different levels you want to, then the whole thing gets put out again, and then the samples get analyzed according to whatever, you know, is being searched for. So that's what this particular instrument here does.
Thank you. It also has sensors on them, basically, because rather than just the samples, it also senses the salinity, tests the salinity of the water, as well as the temperature, because at different depth, the water has got different temperatures. And here as well, you see, for example, through the FLME program, several instruments have been deployed. We've got the Atlas mooring on the right, which basically has got a string of instrumentation such that ultimately can measure up to it's sort of like it flows on top, and it does quite a lot of things. It measures wind speed, it also measures salinity, it also measures the current, the strength of the current, it also measures acoustics. And it's still on the left, but the UTR, which is our underwater temperature researcher, to make sure that ultimately whatever all the different levels, these UTRs are being, so it's like a string. And within the string, these UTRs are being appended. And it measures different types, and it reports to the sensor. It doesn't necessarily have to be on the ship, because it's being deployed and then sitting back at home on your computer, then you are able to access all that information. And the bases are normally changed every 2 years. And then we also have got the aquaflux. As you can see, there's a yellow figure being deployed there. At the tip of it is an antenna that sends messages to the satellite. It goes deep into the water and takes a measurement, depending on the receptors that are being placed. I mean, the sensors that are being placed on the instrument are deeper, depending on the need. They could be for temperature, it could also be for salinity, and it could also be for acoustic measurement. But ultimately, after collecting data underwater, it goes up out of the water, and it tips the antenna and sends to a satellite, and that information is captured, and continues to do that until its battery is replaced. Currently here, we have a recent program that has launched just last month ago. It's an international program as well, that is the Agalas Assisting Climate Array. So this is a program that has a collaboration of South African Institute through the South African Earth Observation Network, as well as Institute in the USA and Institute in the Netherlands. Most importantly, here we need specialties and expertise in deploying long moorings because of the different sizes. As you can see from the system there, it moves in terms of the rate, the long walk, the tall mornings are able to go much deeper. But then to be able to do that, because this program was initially identified by the Global Committee, Global Oceans Committee, as a need, because our Tarakian Agala current is very unique, and it's been seen as to be influencing quite a lot of currents in the North Atlantic. But there has not been any observation that have been made. And as far as a through partnership with Tarakian Institute, this program was initiated, I think initiated started, about 3 weeks ago, so that the moorings were, several moorings were placed, as well as the CTD stations were also being made. That means when deploying the CTD, the ship has to dock, and then once docked, you send out the CTD for some time, and you take out those measurements. I mean, all those black box indicates where the ship has to stop to deploy a CTD along that line. That kind of information, it will be done repeatedly also to be aligned with the moorings.
So on the right hand side you see as a cross section, essentially you've got a very heavy anchor at the bottom of each of these long cables. So this is a very long cable, depending on the depth of the sea. And attached to that cable at various points are these sensors that measure whatever they measure. And the whole thing is moored to the sea floor through some very heavy anchor. And these cables are deployed at regular intervals up to several hundred kilometers off course, isn't it?
Yes. The actual red line, the red are the mooring system, and the black are the CTD stations.
Okay. So these are deployed all along these, so they're like an array of sensors that stretch away from the coastline. And this only shows one of those arrays. There are, I don't know, 5 or 6 that South Africa has evolved in, these long arrays that go away from our coast to measure currents and whatever.
Yes, another experiment, primary experiment that we are participating in also international is through the South African National Antarctic Program that is implemented by the CSIR, the SOCO, that is the Southern Oceans Climate Carbon Observatory. Here, what has happened is that a primary observation is going to see from the South African coast to the Antarctic coast, the quite a number of lines where within the Southern Oceans from the Atlantic to the Southern Ocean. Where quite a number of observations have been made. And then this contributes to quite a number of global programs like the carbon dioxide analysis center, which is situated in the USA, and also the surface oxygen center analysis, which is basically for the broader research community. And so-called contributes, by merely contributing that their data, they also get access to the global data that other researchers from different institutions are also making for comparative studies.
So what's important here is understanding what happens to carbon dioxide. We all know carbon dioxide is a very important driver of climate change. Carbon dioxide doesn't exist only in the air, it exists in the sea as well. It's absorbed into the sea, it gets released, and so it's this exchange, and measuring therefore carbon dioxide in the sea is a very important aspect of measuring its impact on climate change.
One of the innovations that have been a new innovation in the South African space is the use of sea data robotics. In this case, this upon the new Agalas, you see researchers here are deploying this robotics. These are sort of Agalas, like they go, they are operating, they are robotic, they are operating independently of the ocean, of the boat. You deploy them, you go back, and you can come and collect them later. Basically, that direction is controlled. That means you operate them manually, like you're using a joystick to direct it into wherever you want to go. And you have to look as well. It's also got a proprietary, meaning that it can go deep into the ocean and collect data as you like it. And then with the kind of sensors, any variety of sensors, the kind of data that you want. And then it will also, through remote sensing, using the satellite information, then it goes up and then and disseminates the data. And you can do that. Because what has happened is that because the ship, operation of the ship sometimes is limited to, particularly in winter. So Elena was intended to go to Antarctica in the winter, of which in, normally with the ship it's difficult to obtain data in that area. So using this kind of technology, Recently, Karaka has been able to do that, to send those drivers to Atlantica and collect ocean data and be able to look through the data.
It's a marine equipment, it's a drone, except it's not yet regulated by
So basically it operates in an integrated platform, because we're using what we are currently established in the Center for High-Performance Computing. Remember that it generates quite a lot of data. That data has to be, we need something like the HPC to be able to decide what kind of data, because without the HPC we wouldn't be able to, I mean this phone will be used but then it will basically be useless. And the use of satellites are very key in this case, and ultimately you promote skills basically in satellite operations, people who are able to decipher satellite data. And also, these robotics can also be operated on the vessel as well. So that ultimately, you have sort of like an integrated platform to do whatever investigations that you want. And another type of glider in this case is called the wind gliders. This basically, sit on the way, they don't go deep, they just guide on the way, but then as well, they are also remotely operated. And recently, as I said, this is a very interesting piece of equipment, because with the operation of this duck, sometimes they find it difficult for them to monitor illegal fishing. So ultimately, through engagement with SOCO, they were able to put in sensors there. That will enable them sometimes when the soviets do their own experiment, and on when they're not doing it, when they need to do some patrolling, because this can also be assisted in patrolling, because they will be able to send this sort of drones around the water, and then they'll give data in terms of what can be happening. But then most importantly for research purposes, they'll also collect data. For example, current speed, they'll also be able to tell what is the speed of the current, also be able to determine the waves, the wind speed around the ocean. And that's why this can be used for multiple purposes, and then currently being seen, and most importantly, that this is currently implemented by other departments. And all the departments, that is, other institutions like the SAMHSA, the American Maritime Institute, have also seen an interest as well to see how can we do this, also monitor the ocean. Like the Department of Environmental Affairs wants to also use it to monitor, to see, detect oil spills as well using this kind of technology, because sometimes taking out the entire vessel is quite expensive, and this will reduce the cost. And just to thank you again, and just to also highlight that one of the key things is that we also have a very interesting public engagement program where learners are being brought into this vessel, are taken to arrive, to entice them to see what the kind of work that is being done. And as you can see at the bottom there, the remotely operated vehicle, which is controlled by a manual, without people going inside the water, is being deployed. And this instrument can easily collect samples without in the water. Thank you.
I'm not sure. I think it's the intelligence of Dr. Thomas is very clear. He decides to do this on the eve of the budget space. And he talks to us on a strategy. And this strategy is showing you clearly that this development is in a global phase, and it needs money to be able to do what it wants to do. And it's very interesting that what you are telling us. It's very cool. And I think that's it. So you are very strategic. That's on the eve of, so that the members can ask for more money there. And a lot of development needs more money. No, thank you very much. There might be a lot of confusion. There's a mass here, we're talking about mass, and it's the same person that talked about the other mass. But this is another mass that we're talking about, it's not the same matter. But I think there are key things here. I think science and technology is that one area that looks into the future. And sometimes it looks required to what has happened so that we can be able to mentor the future. And this is a very good example of medical diffusion. It's a strategy accepted, but it's a very good strategy for the future. to know what's under it. And they are working on that program. And if my understanding is very, is very good. And the other thing that we need to work on as parliamentarians, as I mentioned here, that and also you correct me if I'm wrong, it says we've got about 200 kilometers, but there's a possibility that we can get more. And obviously, it depends on the parliamentarians to help them make sure that that happens. The other thing that we've always been talking about, besides the resources, is that we've got a tendency of not working together at different departments. This is another example of an integration of departments, when the departments need to work together in making sure that we better South Africa, we better our continent, we better do well. And if we don't do that, we're all going to perish in our silos, which is not what we want. So thank you very much, but I think we're going to be very curious on your strategy, the performance that we must try for more money and say we'll see what can happen. And the other thing, remember, for me it was very important. I suspect it was one of the few areas where two oceans meet. I always know that the two oceans are one, but the two oceans are meeting. And the other is very cold, the other one is warm. And it might indeed have an impact on our planet. And if we understand what is going on about two oceans, it might have serious implications. And if we understand it, it would be easy to predict what might happen in the climate. And South Africa is one place, because it's well, it can happen in other countries, but I think it's one of the few that South Africa is going to have that problem. I think we need to confront the thing of astronomy as where the leaders in astronomy, we want to know about it and be clear about it. And I'm sure you're going to have a question, but we need to be clear so that when we debate the leaders, this actually was not the proper feature. This is what they've done when we invested more. And if you continue investing more, this is what's going to happen. And we've seen there's no cancer that can do. In fact, there's nothing that we can do without human resources. And now, if we've seen that human resources are actually, they are not responding towards our cancer. And if they are oxygen that brain that is going to the other countries, but they're coming to South Africa. Yet a few years ago, they went to the other countries. And this is the work of the government. Thank you very much, member. It's for you to ask questions and interrogate them. I see the oh, you came later, just first to answer your question, but that's very good. It means you understood. I was going to tell you what they presented, but it seems that you have caught up to the strategy. Okay, so
thanks,
Chair.
I would just like to ask, the Department of Environmental Affairs and the Department of Science and Technology, they're supposed to work together specifically on NOS, because it's developed in connection with the Department of Environmental Affairs. But according to my knowledge, the Department of Environmental Affairs strategic and implementation plans will only be finalized by 2019-2020. So how will this impact? Do you know about this? And how will it impact on your plans going forward with this project? Because it has serious cost implications, and I believe serious planning implications as well.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, just I think regarding the last slide, so what I think Dr. Arthur Harder, that the climate strategy has been a long time coming, or given our geographical location, that is actually a pity that we haven't done or focused on the ocean much sooner. Now, my question also is more related to what my colleague has said, and that is the budgetary implications of all of this, because even in the slides we've seen now, one can see it's quite capital intensive. And then also the whole question of what is the role of the Department of Environmental Affairs in terms of the budget. Will it be a 50-50 partnership, or how will that be managed? And then also just regarding the Aralis, who takes ultimate responsibility now for the ship? Does it fall within DST? Does DST fund it? Who pays for it? Thank you.
Thank you. So those are the twins. And in fact, the question about who takes responsibility, which is very important, there's a lot of things that are left hanging between the MP and others, where you never know where. It's as if the SP is just coordinating, but it does not have responsibility. We're not fighting for the SP, but I think we need to be very careful for something, because we think that the transformer is the SP. The other thing to follow, but fund of the budget for something, it can tell us what's happening.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you to the two members for the questions and concerns that they've raised. I'll give it a try and then I'll see if Dr. Siko's got anything to add to it. First of all, Honorable Tablange, I'm not exactly sure which exact plans you're referring to there. I don't know if this is a reference in their strategic plan and the annual performance plan to this specific strategy. If that's so, I haven't seen it. So I can't give you a detailed response on it. What I do know is that they have been very much part of the development of this strategy. I confirmed that by speaking to my counterpart colleague in the department just recently, and I've confirmed this with two colleagues, two senior managers in the department, that they have been part of this process and are happy with the content of the strategy. Remembering that it's a draft, so there will be some final tweaking. I'm sure that, you know, what will be in the final strategy that goes to Cabinet is 90% or more of what's the current version. But there is a small variance. So I'm afraid I can't give more details on the question that you've raised. Also the question from the Honourable Notrie. As I indicated, we will need to now develop more detailed implementation plans. This is the, as it were, then the point at which the rubber hits the road. We will have to then develop at the level of resourcing and access to infrastructure more detailed plans of what we intend doing on an annual basis, and that would then be reflected in relevant annual performance plans as well. We're not at that point yet. We have reached agreement at a conceptual strategic level of what is the area in which we're going to go. We have, I think, also developed across the two communities, Environment Affairs and DST NRF community, a good understanding of who would be responsible for delivering on what. There are aspects of the strategy, for example, where clearly the South and Maritime Safety Authority needs to come in. So it's a wide-ranging strategy. It should also be seen to be, in the sense, in parallel to the Operation Papisa, and not, they can't be reduced to the same thing. These are two different initiatives. They are clearly informed by each other. But there are things that will happen under Operation Pakistan that aren't necessarily part of the strategy, because remember, this is a research strategy. This is not, in the first instance, an economic development strategy. It's a research strategy that is intended to produce outputs that could be utilized for a range of different socio-economic purposes. Economic development purposes is one of them. But there are a very important aspect is also about environmental management of the marine environment. So this strategy has been designed to produce those sorts of outputs from a research perspective. So the details of how we will engage now in taking forward the research thrusts that are outlined, those five research thrusts and the second level research project priorities, those we need to still workshop now with the Department of Environment Affairs, with the National Research Foundation, because clearly we can't do everything all at once. So we have to plan this carefully. And we're very happy to come back to Parliament in due course to give you more details on this, but at the moment I can't. Turning to the the exact contributions of the Department of Environment Affairs and the Department of DST, Department of Science and Technology, to these plans, to the implementation of the plans, will be worked up as we develop detailed implementation level roadmaps for this strategy now. With regard to the costs of running the boat, the situation is as it has been before, and as we've provided feedback in various parliamentary questions. The ownership of the Agalas II vests with the Oceans and Coasts Division of the Department of Environment Affairs. And the Department of Environment Affairs is responsible for the daily operational activities of the boat. So they're responsible for ensuring that the boat does what it's supposed to do in terms of providing logistic support to the Sinai Basin in the Antarctic and the bases on the island Marion and Prince Edward Island. And just to give you an example of this, for example, if you haven't had briefings from Environment Affairs, I mean, a large portion of what they do is transport colleagues and contractors from the Department of Public Works to the bases, who have to maintain the base. This is not something the Department of Science and Technology does, or our stakeholders, and not something that the Department of Environment Affairs does. This is the responsibility of public boats. They have to get there somehow. So the boats, for example, during their logistic support vests or support trips, what they do is they bring workers from the Department of Public Works and whatever materials they need there. It's a complex operation, with a wide scope of activities that this boat is responsible for. It's not just for carrying researchers that are working on research projects that are funded by the Department of Science and Technology. So the ownership of the boat and the responsibility for its daily operational activities lie with the Department of Environment Affairs. One of the responsibilities that the Department of Environment Affairs also has is to accommodate research needs from the research community in the trips that the boat undertakes. So, and what this means, it means at least two things. It means taking researchers to the bases if they need to get there to do their research, together with whatever equipment they need. And it also means providing a research platform to researchers who are undertaking research during the trip of the boat. So as the boat goes to Prince Edward and Marion Islands and to the Sinai Base, then a whole lot of research happens along the way. So they have to stop at certain times to drop these CTD things, for example, or the drones, the gliders, this sort of stuff. So they stop along the way to deploy these research activities. So factoring the research utilization of the boat into the operational plan, the business plan of the boat, is also not a trivial exercise, because they can't afford to make a trip to the Antarctic just for five researchers. So all of these interests have to be brought together. And it's a complex operation. And obviously it's an area where, you know, there's constantly opportunity for improvement. But it's not like there's an opportunity for improving by 70 or 80%. The improvements one makes in the arrangements between the departments are really more at a marginal level. There are major constraints like the one that I indicated that jointly we're unable right now to finance a bigger utilization of the boat beyond the 180 to 200 days. It's not like we don't want to, it's that at the moment we don't have the capacity to do that for a range of reasons. And so the Department of Science, Technology and Environment Affairs have regular meetings. To a large extent, these involve the National Research Foundation as well. The National Research Foundation, of course, is our agency for managing the research activities in the marine and Antarctic area. But we participate in those discussions and help mediate the discussions between the Department of Environment Affairs and the National Research Foundation in order to maximize the benefits of the boat to the research programs that the Department of Science and Technology supports. So as far as I'm concerned, we have very good relations with the Department of Environment Affairs around this. And I think that to a large extent, the collaboration is already fairly optimal. As I said, there's always a chance for making improvements or coming. But it's already a very optimal relationship. And I'm certain that developing the implementation plans for the Marine and Antarctic Research Strategy will bring us even closer together and will allow us to identify further opportunities for improving the efficiency and effectiveness of our cooperation in this area, because we have joint interests in that. So I think I've answered you specifically on the question of the management of the boat at this point. Anything you need to add? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kumar. Are there any follow-up questions? I think everything is pretty clear. We will accept, definitely accept your studies. And obviously, know that we are working, we are acting on a global stage. We have no option but to talk about the resources that we are getting. Much as we want to know how much does it need to do all these things, but we think that it's for the future, because it's an investment that needs to come back later on. So we need to put in money to make sure that human capital that will leave you, they actually come to you, they focus on you. And we've always been complaining about youth unemployment. I think these are the areas, even they're dropping the ocean, but these are the opportunities for youth, for further studies and for new opportunities. And we definitely think that that is important. So we have accepted the studies and we want to take it over. Sometimes very small things, being a leader you can abuse. You never know what has been put among you as a leader, but the people that have been there. Now, I was asking myself, when I'm sitting here, how could they abuse my power and say, there's a woman trying to sit next to me and go and decide at the expense of business and the expense of, so you should be doing it for me. Not comfort like this. I first my studies as well say it's for the lead and the leader. So you've got to be compromised. But I think the principal tried to compromise them and use the other one. That's why it broke. And he was trying to benefit me and that one of the now thank you very much. We are not never these people want to say I don't think they'll see I'm outside the team. So this is the end. So you can go and prepare for the budget decision for tomorrow. Don't forget them that they've asked to speak on their behalf. In one or another, but just to speak on their behalf, that to want more money to go for good strategy. Thank you very much, my friend. It's the end of the meeting. We'll meet tomorrow. We'll meet tomorrow.